7 minutes after the scheduled time, we were giving a little bit more time to see if folks will show up. I think given the level of attendance, I will invite folks to sit around the table so we can have more of a dialogue and a conversation. So feel free to sit around the table. My name is Miriam Chun. I'm the Planning and Research Director at the Association of Bay Area Governments. And with me, Alex Bockelman from MTC and Brad Paul will be guiding and leading the session today. Alex?
And my mic isn't working. There you go. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for Policy here at MTC. And in a moment, I'd like to go around the room and ask that everyone introduce themselves. But before we do that, since it's been a while since this group has met, I wanted to take a few minutes just to sort of remind everyone, the mission of the ROG and explain how it fits in with the work of MTC and ABAG. The ROG, or Regional Advisory Working Group, is just that. It's a staff working group. It is made up of local agency staff from cities, counties, congestion management agencies, transit operators, as well as partner regional agencies. And it really is meant to provide input to ABAG and MTC staff on some of the more technical aspects of developing Plan Bay Area. There's no set membership in this working group. It's open to all who want to participate. Representatives from nonprofits and other organizations, as well as members of the public, are welcome to attend. These meetings are audio cast via MTC's website and available to review there. ROG hasn't been meeting regularly since the last plan was adopted in 2013. We expect to start holding more regular meetings as we get into the update to the plan, but that probably won't happen until, in terms of regular meetings, until the spring of 2015, and then we may have this group meet as frequently as monthly. The meetings do operate informally. We'll call on you if you raise your hand, or if you're so make sure you speak into the mic, and if you're seated away from the table, you can stand up at one of the mics and you'll be recognized to speak. Please keep your comments as brief as possible and don't interrupt other speakers. We want to make sure that we can get through the items today and get everybody's comments. So with that, I wanted to go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves. And we kind of introduced you, Brad, but...
I'm Brad Paul. I'm Deputy Director of ABAG.
Good. Oh, Paul Brooks, member of the public, just retired. Can now attend your day meetings.
If I may ask you, you need to press the button to speak, but if you can turn it off after you do it, because there's a limit of how many microphones can be on. Thank you.
Joel Irvis with Regional Asthma Management and Prevention.
Jeff Levin, Policy Director with East Bay Housing Organizations.
Adam Garcia with Green Belt Alliance.
Robert McCauley, Director of Planning for the Solana Transportation Authority.
Amber Crabb with the San Francisco Transportation Authority.
Roland Sobran, member of the public.
Paul Campos, the Building Industry Association.
Diana Kina, the City of Emeryville.
Carolyn Clevenger, MTC.
Ellen Griffin, MTC.
My part of this meeting?
If you want to introduce
My name is Jim Bitter. I'm from Mill Valley, and I don't represent anybody but the myself and maybe the public who's not here to watch this.
Martha Silver, MTC.
Leslie Lara with MTC.
Great. So the first item today is the Regional Goods Movement Plan update. So I'm going to turn it over to Carolyn Clevenger for that report.
Good morning. I think many of you who were involved when we adopted the final plan Bay Area last year remember there was a lot of discussion about the need to do more work in goods movement in advance of the next RTP. So we've been working at a staff level and through our committees to start an update to the Regional Goods Movement Plan. I just wanted to give you an update on that. And there's also a memo that goes over some of the work that we've been doing over the last about 6 months. So the focus on goods movement, it's obviously an integral part of the region's economy. That was one of the, the economy is one of the three E's that we often use as our pillars of planning, environment, equity, and economy. And one of the items that came up quite a bit in the last RTP adoption was that we need to focus more on some of the economy elements. So the goods movement network accounts for about 32% of jobs in the region are related to goods movement activity. It's also a major source of job diversity in the region, with over $600 billion of goods flowing within or to the Bay Area each and every year. In terms of MTC's mandate, obviously goods movement is heavily reliant on the transportation system. So we have within our region the nation's fifth largest marine port at the Port of Oakland, as well as smaller ports throughout the region serving niche markets, and two major airports. SFO is primarily the international air cargo airport in the region, while Oakland specializes in domestic air cargo. San Jose also has some air cargo, but the volumes are significantly lower than those other two airports. In addition, obviously, there's a lot of trucks and rail using our major highway and rail corridors that connect the region to our neighboring regions in the Central Valley and Sacramento areas, as well as across the rest of the country. And then finally, at the most local level, goods are obviously delivered on our streets and roads to local consumers, to businesses. And one of the things we've heard a lot through some of the initial beginnings of this project are that the impacts on local streets and pavement issues and just local circulation is a really important thing for jurisdictions and communities across the region. In addition, goods movement has significant public health and quality of life impacts, particularly on those communities located in close proximity to major goods movement hubs across the region. And the next few slides just give you an overview of some of what is moving in the region. The vast majority of goods are domestic. I think we have a tendency to think, oh, it's international, it's just moving through our region. But the vast majority of goods are really supporting people who live here and businesses that operate within the Bay Area. So domestic freight movement is and will remain, based on all the forecasts we've seen, the predominant movement of goods within the region. We do see exports growing pretty significantly. And these are all based on federal forecasts that the federal government puts out for every region across the country. And it does show exports growing significantly faster than imports or domestic cargo. In terms of the actual goods that are moving, a lot of high-value products like electronics, machinery, and vehicles are moving through the region, and that really is reflective of the major consumer base that is our region, as well as the high, a lot of the high-value manufacturing and high-tech work that goes on in the region. There's a number of categories related to food and beverage industry, both produced in the region and coming here from the Central Valley. And you also see a number of petroleum and gasoline products categories, and that's really going to and from the refineries, as well as serving all of the people in the Bay Area who are driving or using fuel to generate electricity. As I mentioned, goods movement is a critical component of our economy for jobs in the region. About a third of the jobs are goods movement dependent. And you'll see a breakdown. The pie chart on the right gives more breakdown of what that 32% is. So you see manufacturing, construction, the actual transportation sector, as well as agriculture and natural resources. Just to give you a sense of the project, this slide gives you a pretty high-level overview of a lot of the different goods movement initiatives underway within the state. So we are doing the regional goods movement plan in coordination with Alameda County, which is updating their countywide goods movement plan. They're doing their first goods movement plan for their county. So we're utilizing our resources jointly as much as possible because obviously we don't need to both be doing the same work under separate contracts. So we are working closely with them to make sure that we're using resources most effectively and that we're developing similar advocacy platforms so that the region can really stand united at the state and federal level. Our goods movement plan will feed into the next RTP, as I mentioned. Alameda counties will feed into the next countywide plan. And then there's on the left column, it lays out a number of initiatives at the federal and state level. So Caltrans, their local district office, District 4, last year did a freight mobility study, which is what we're using as the base data for a lot of our work. And that was done in order to feed into the draft state freight mobility plan. So MAP 21, which is the current federal transportation authorization, strongly recommended that states do a freight plan. Caltrans is trying to get that done by the end of the year, which was required in some state legislation that passed last year. So we've been working very closely with Caltrans to provide Bay Area input into their state freight plan. In terms of the outreach structure that we have for the goods movement plan, we have an executive team of executive level agency directors from a number of the CMAs, from Caltrans, the Air District, agencies that are critically involved in goods movement as part of their day-to-day agency functions. They're meeting about quarterly. More recently, it's been more like once every 6 months to check in and talk about what work we're doing and where we're hoping to take the goods movement work. We have technical teams. So one of the requests to you and PTAC, which is our Partnership Technical Advisory Committee, are we going to create a subcommittee from the two groups to focus on goods movement so we can have more detailed discussions of the deliverables as they're being developed? And get input from technical staff. So we are hoping if anyone here or other folks in the ROG that you know are interested, please email me if you'd like to serve on that subcommittee. They'll be meeting approximately quarterly over the next year and a half or so. We are doing some targeted interest group meetings. We've done about 30 so far to date, and that's meeting with the private sector, shippers, people actually are using the goods movement system as part of their day-to-day business operations, economic development and business groups, environmental groups, public health, community groups. The first round of outreach was to really understand their issues and areas of opportunity that they see so that we're addressing them as we start developing the plan. We'll be going back out with a second round of interest group meetings early next year to start talking about the needs assessment, and then probably again in the summer to start laying out draft strategies and get feedback about what we're missing, what we need to focus on more. And then we're doing roundtables, a series of 6 roundtables. We held the first one in July that is meant to bring together people from all these different stakeholder groups to talk about. The first one was talk about sort of what's going on in goods movement in general, try and start building some collaboration across the region. And we'll be holding the next one in November in West Oakland to focus more on community impacts. The overall schedule of the project, as I mentioned, we're in phase one right now, which is doing the first round of meetings with stakeholders. We've also started developing the baseline needs assessment. As I mentioned, that's building off a lot of the work that was done for the Caltrans District 4 study. And we're starting into this year and early into next year to be developing, to identify and evaluate strategies with a goods movement plan coming out early fall next year. I just want to give you a high-level overview of some of the trends and issues that we've been hearing so far as we've done these stakeholder meetings. We've definitely heard a lot of focus on trying to keep pace with economic trends, trying to make sure the Bay Area stays economically competitive, both to support our industries within the Bay Area as well as Northern California overall. Most of the businesses we met with really said, you know, it's not just the Bay Area. We're really focused on a broader geography than that. And so really trying to understand some of the interconnections with our neighboring regions. From the Port of Oakland as well as some of their neighborhoods surrounding the port, we've heard a lot of interest in understanding marine terminal congestion, some of the spillover impacts into the neighborhoods because of that. Local truck routes, something that actually came up in 2004 when we last did a goods movement study and is coming up again, is some of the jurisdictional coordination or lack thereof in terms of local truck routes and trying to understand that. So we are doing a focused pilot within Alameda County to look at a few jurisdictions and how their truck routes, you know, do or don't coordinate. jobs and equity in terms of actually getting the communities who are impacted by goods movement to have opportunities within the goods movement industries is something we've heard a lot of interest in. ITS, which is Intelligent Transportation Systems, people are interested in identifying strategies to use ITS to improve operations both within the ports themselves as well as on the roadways. And then obviously people are interested in where there might be funding to help support goods movements, so trying to think about innovative funding and financing strategies. We've also heard a lot about public health impacts of goods movement, pollution, as well as roadway and railway safety, and actually I'll add to that also pedestrian safety, particularly at grade crossings, and bike safety. We've heard some concerns about rail track and bike safety and some conflicts there. There's a lot of concern both in the region and state as well as nation about shifting crude supplies leading to increased rail usage within communities and concerns about safety. So we're sort of monitoring a lot of the activity going on around that right now. Pavement maintenance comes up often at our commission as well as with local jurisdictions about local streets and roads and truck routes that get heavily damaged by the heavy trucks. The trucks cause much more damage on local pavement. So trying to understand how we might develop some strategies or programs to focus on that issue. Most of our highway and rail corridors are both commuter and goods movement corridors, so there's a lot of conflict and overlap, particularly about time of day and shared use conflicts, so we're trying to look at some strategies there. At grade crossings, I mentioned that's both a safety issue as well as noise and emissions issue, when you have backup at different grade crossings. It's particularly an issue along the East Shore 80 corridor there, where you have a lot of freight and actually more passenger than freight traffic at this point, moving along pretty densely populated communities. Land use conflicts and industrial corridors, and then truck parking, which is always brought up as an issue, and how we can try to really understand truck parking, also truck servicing needs in the region. So just some of the other additional goods movement efforts underway that I mentioned, Caltrans has their draft freight mobility plan out right now for public comment. And CARB is developing a sustainable freight strategy. They'll be briefing their board in December on that, and that's focused on trying to support the advancement of zero emissions freight technologies throughout the state. So ARB is working with Caltrans, and they're talking about trying to get the plans to meld together, but we'll see how that plays out over time. And then MTC, as part of one of our settlements from one of the Plan Barrier lawsuits, will be doing some zero emissions freight analysis. We'll be kicking that off early next year. We're hoping to build off of the technology assessments that CARB has been doing as part of their sustainable freight strategy. They've been doing technical assessments of different technologies for rail and truck zero emissions equipment. So we're hoping to build off of that rather than duplicating that work. As I mentioned, we'll be creating this subcommittee of folks who are interested in talking about goods movement in greater detail, so we don't have to always bring it back to the full committee each time. We're trying to complete the baseline assessment by the end of this month and are conducting the detailed needs assessment. Hopefully, we'll complete that next month and get some drafts out to our subcommittee once they're formed. And we'll be continuing to do stakeholder engagement and our second roundtable. We're finalizing the date for November in West Oakland, so we'll be sure to mail that information out once that's finalized. So with that, I will take any questions.
Carolyn, again, STA is real happy with the process that's going on here and the progress that's being made and our chance to participate. A couple of comments I want to make on slide number 2, where you talk about the goods movement international from SFO and domestic from Oakland. I do want to point out that a third airport that carries a very significant cargo volume is Travis Air Force Base. I know that doesn't impact most of the Bay Area, but it is an important issue in Solano. On slide number 4, where you show goods movement by dollar value, since this is to a very large extent a transportation study as well, it would be good to also be able to show that by volume, because that's what so much impacts the surface transportation, which then has the spillover to the communities. And I don't know if this is what you're already looked at, but as we talk about these goods, it might be good to look at what's the distance that they're moved. For example, if you have a chip that's made in Silicon Valley moves 30 miles up the road to SFO and goes by air, that has a much different sort of impact than a bushel of wheat that comes from the Central Valley into Oakland. So those distances, I think, would be important. Three last comments. I like the fact under the issues that you really talk about local impacts of traffic, air quality, and health to local communities. And I wouldn't mind actually seeing a little more emphasis on kind of the ladder of opportunity theory, that goods movement in how it supports manufacturing and warehousing really helped provide the ladder into the kind of the information middle class economy that's so much of the Bay Area. And then one last thing that's maybe it's a little early to start talking about the issue, but that's actually one of fund sources, that obviously any of these improvements are very expensive. But in the past, we've talked about, for example, would cap and trade be an appropriate source? Well, that's a fee on greenhouse gas emissions that if you try and apply it to like some of the health issues that you face in West Oakland with diesel, you might run into kind of the Nolan Dolan issue of is that an appropriate use of the fee for what you're trying to impact. And so that's probably something to bring up fairly soon is, are the fund sources appropriate to the sorts of impacts we're trying to mitigate by the use of those fund sources? So sorry for the long dissertation, but just some of the things that I noted and want to bring up. Thank you.
Can members of the public speak?
Hi, I'm Zelda Bronstein again. Just want to say a little bit more about, well, I didn't say very much about my background at all. So I served on the Berkeley Planning Commission for 7 years, chaired it for two, and I got an education about industrial retention. Berkeley still has an industrial economy. I'm now reporting on what's going on in San Francisco and the so-called eastern neighborhoods. What's going on in both those places, and it's don't take it from me, it's documented in the very expensive, quite excellent reports that were done for MTC by Hausrath Economics and Cambridge Systematics, is that the smart growth model of land use and zoning has no place at all for manufacturing and other industrial activities. That land is relatively cheap. Developers want it because they can get much higher rents, profits, by putting commercial, other kinds of commercial development. And that's what we're seeing in this area, in our region. It's driving out the industrial businesses, and that's increasing air pollution, congestion on the freeways and other roads. Those good jobs are going away. I really would like to see some emphasis on that. All this stuff is great, but the freight, and it's important, but it's not a land use component, and that needs to be called out. It was called out big time in those reports. It's never been adequately addressed by the regional agencies. I wrote a 6-page single-space letter, actually, to MDC ABAC during the Plan Bay Area 2013 participation, public comment process. It was cited in the environmental groups. Lawsuit of the agencies, which is a successful lawsuit. I looked at the final, not comment, was on the draft. Word for word, the same disingenuous, let's just put it, I'm being polite, language that was in the draft appeared in the final version of the plan. That's not right. Guys got to do better, and gals as well. Thank you.
Zelda, thank you very much for your comments. We can always count on you to kind of recognize the importance of industrial jobs and industrial land. So what Carolyn has presented is the goods movement piece. There's a companion piece that you'll hear about that later, which is the industrial land and industrial jobs component. We got started with the goods movement, which is the infrastructure piece, in parallel with Alameda, related to some of the state and federal efforts. But you're correct in the sense that we need to have a better understanding of what's the makeup of industrial jobs, not just in a few places, but across the region. We need to have an understanding of what's the makeup of those jobs. Some of those are traditional industrial jobs. Some of those are very different and have a very different location pattern than we used to have in the past. We have a number of contractors, operating offices from their homes. We have all kinds of coffee roasting and all kinds of food preparation components that are of a different kind. So we'll be doing an assessment of that in collaboration with UC Berkeley, an assessment of what's the industrial land in the region, where are the industrial jobs located, and what's the makeup of those industrial jobs. And that's, again, a companion piece to the goods movement.
Yes, I just wondered, there doesn't appear to be a breakdown of how much of this is by rail and how much by road. Is that going to be addressed?
We do have a breakdown by mode, and we also do have a breakdown of the commodity flows by volume. And we've broken that, actually. These are all regional numbers that come from the federal government. We have broken it down to the county level so that the county planning agencies can use that data. But we do have it by mode, so I can send some of those charts out if you want to give me your email afterwards.
Just to follow up on the industrial assessment, you said it's a companion piece to this process. So is it on the same timeline then? As
we will end at the same time, but we're just getting started. So I'm assuming at one of the upcoming meetings with this regional advisor working group, we'll bring the scope and the specific tasks.
Great. And then Carolyn, I had a question for you too. Thanks for the presentation. On slide 9. Question for you about the different phases. Under phase 3, where it says identify and evaluate strategies, air quality and community impacts are noted. And I'm just curious if you could unpack that a little bit in terms of are you talking about strategies that would address air quality and community impacts? And then my follow-up question would be, are air quality and community impacts also incorporated in any way in the baseline and needs assessments that are being conducted? The baseline assessment, the description of it in your memo, just mentions the economic role, but doesn't talk about any other issues. So,
yeah, we are addressing, or identifying, I guess, during the needs assessment, the air quality and community impact pieces. We specifically call the economic importance because that's something that hasn't really been highlighted in as many past studies. There's been a lot of studies I know your group has been involved with in terms of air quality and community impacts. So we are addressing those through each phase, and the strategies we're hoping will include both policies as well as projects that would improve air quality and community impacts.
So I have a question on slide number 3. The question is, do you have a sense of how much of that freight is actually in transit between Asia, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa? And the reason I'm asking the question is because, as you know, the Panama Canal is being widened, so the large ships will be able to go through, and the Chinese are currently working on the Nicaragua Canal. Thank you.
Yeah, for the Bay Area, most of the freight that's coming in from Asia is serving Northern California, a little bit of Nevada, maybe Arizona, but we don't typically get as much goods coming into the Bay Area that then goes all the way to Chicago. You know, most of that freight's coming through L.A. Long Beach ports. So we do know that the majority of freight is serving the Bay Area population and businesses, about 80%. That's not just through traffic.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you for allowing the public to speak. It's kind of refreshing. I think people are entitled to their opinion, global warming, climate change. but when we pay a bureaucracy to do the work of the public, I think it's important to have sound engineering, business, and economic models. So I heard the phrase zero emissions freight. What is zero emission freight?
Well, it's CARB is looking at technologies that would. Right now, their main focus is on electric trucks or different types of electric-powered rail shuttles are the two main technologies that they're looking at right now. And that is meant to reduce the emissions from, say, diesel trucks that are the primary transportation mode that impacts local communities in terms of an air quality perspective within the Bay Area. So ARB has a series of technology assessments that look at new technologies, and this is definitely not my area of expertise, but new technologies that can reduce emissions from diesel-powered trucks, rail, There are some shore power projects at the ports right now where ships essentially plug in and don't have to run their diesel generators while they're at port. So that dramatically reduces both particulate matter emissions as well as GHG emissions while the ships are in dock. So those are the three main categories. They're also doing some work on cargo handling equipment at the ports and rail yards that would hopefully electrify or use hydrogen technologies to fuel, to basically take the trucks, rail, and cargo equipment off of diesel-generated sources.
Okay, so when I was in the United States Coast Guard during Vietnam, and we parked our ship in Alameda, mm-hmm. and we did the short tie thing, mm-hmm. and we turned off the ours was a steam plant. The other ships were diesels. But when you plug in to the short tie, you're plugging into the PG&E grid, mm-hmm. which is in the Bay Area is mostly natural gas. Mm-hmm. When you burn natural gas, the products of combustion are CO2. Mm-hmm. So there, I'm bothered by this for the sake of the public understanding what precisely we're doing here, zero emission freight. There is no such thing as zero emission. There's no such thing as an electric truck. You couldn't run an electric truck between here and Denver and get it over the hill. Mm-hmm. You'd the batteries, the expense would be horrendous. So I'm worried about a bureaucracy that's putting these things out, and they're essentially not true.
I mean, we'll be starting our zero emissions work early next year. ARB is definitely the lead in looking at zero emission technologies across the state.
Yeah, there is no zero emission technology, so you need to change the wording if you want to be honest with the public. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Is that okay or?
I mean, right now ARB is studying the full life cycle emissions of a lot of those technologies. Because the life cycle of the power grid generation is an issue that we're trying to better understand.
You don't have to understand the power grid. The power grid is like 18% nuclear and 50% or somewhere natural gas, hydro. You know, you can look it up. It comes on your PG&E, but you don't have to understand mm-hmm. it. And to make it zero emissions, we're doing solar and wind, and that's it. And solar is about 4 or 5 times as much per kilowatt hour, and wind's probably more affordable but has time of use problems with So there is no such thing as zero emissions, is all I'm saying. So I would encourage ABAG and MTC and CARB to eliminate that language from what the public sees as far as what they're paying for, a bureaucracy that's trying to change the landscape with the engineering sense that doesn't make that's unsound. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I think, Paul, you had a comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to express my support for the how the goals for the project are described on page 3. I think you've captured a good balance, and I'm pleased to see, again, as you've described, the inclusion of the economic impact and importance of it for goods movement.
Hi, Amber Crabb with the San Francisco TA. I was really happy to see under the issues and opportunities the discussion of complete streets, as well as the treatment of at-grade crossings and safety concerns for bicyclists. And I would just encourage you to also look at the safety impacts, not just at the at-grade, but, you know, on the everyday delivery trucks, what kind of impacts the conflicts that happen and how to improve the safety of those interactions.
Are there other comments or questions on the goods movement item? Because if not, we could probably move on to, any comments, any more comments? All right, then we will thank you very much, Carolyn. And as she mentioned, there will be, I think the next event will be, big public event will be in November in West Oakland. So stay tuned for more information on that. And now we'll move to the public participation plan. Ellen Griffin is going to give a report on that effort.
Good morning. I'm Ellen Griffin with MTC's Legislation and Public Affairs staff, and we are about to start an update to our public participation plan. Today our purpose is to get some early input on this effort that really will kick off in November. The public participation plan, just a little bit of background, it really is a window into the work that MTC does. It explains the key work products, plans, and so forth, and highlights the opportunities for the public to follow that process, get involved, and help influence the outcome of the Commission's decisions. The PPP, as we call it, is designed to make our work transparent, and we are doing it in response to requirements at the state and federal level, but it's also just part and parcel of being in the Bay Area to be open and to have a real culture of public participation. We're in a review phase. We've done a number of preliminary steps. We've had a couple good conversations with MTC's Policy Advisory Council, and we have been out surveying members of the community at events. We have a public workshop scheduled for October 8th at 6:30 p.m. right here. And we will be launching an online comment forum probably in the next week or so as well, because we recognize that not everyone has time to come to a meeting, but they still might have some good ideas. And then I also wanted to mention that our partner with Plan Bay Area, the Association of Bay Area Governments, has been having a series of discussions with local government officials, local elected officials, about how to best engage constituents in their counties. So this slide gives some background about our current public participation plan, which was adopted in 2010. And it has some guiding principles that essentially just recognize that you need a commitment from the top down for public engagement. And every community is unique, and what might work in one part of the Bay Area for one community might not work in others. And we do all that we can to be accessible, to try and make very complex issues relevant, remove barriers to participation, and just be open to comment. This slide talks about some of the key milestones. As I mentioned, there's a public workshop on October 8th in the evening to hear comments. We plan to issue our draft updated public participation plan for a comment period on November 7th. We'll be presenting the draft to MTC's legislation committee later that month, and the close of a 45-day comment period will come in late December, and then we will summarize all the comments heard, present a response, and if warranted, we would recommend changes based on the comments we get. If those changes are significant, then we would reissue the PPP for a second comment period. So we'll either be adopting it in January if there's no significant changes, or it could be as late as March 2015. So in many ways, the public participation plan for MTC is also a plan for the plan, if you will, a plan for Plan Bay Area. It starts to sound very bureaucratic, but it is intended to really put some sunshine on the process, show where the key issues to get involved will, the key planning milestones, and you know where it's possible to influence outcomes for the public who wants to get involved. Our ABAG and MTC planning staff presented to a joint committee last summer a proposed approach to Plan Bay Area. And, you know, I'm certainly not the expert in the planning process, but I can tell you that the effort for 2017, when they're scheduled to adopt a revised Plan Bay Area, it's a focused update. This isn't a brand new plan. We really just finished a process in 2013, so we don't expect, start with a clean slate. It's going to emphasize issues like how to keep our infrastructure in a state of good repair and keep focusing on the performance of the projects that are funded to make sure we're having projects that meet the goals of the plan. There will be some new focus areas. You just heard a presentation on freight. And there's work going on at other regional agencies that would also get integrated in. So just really quickly, some of the key, this is just basic planning. There'll be goal setting and performance measurements early on in the process. And then there'll be a focus on the transportation investments and evaluating those projects for their performance. Then the planners will start their regional forecast work for travel, for housing and jobs. Those will turn into scenarios, and that will inform a draft plan and a draft environmental impact report. So those are the key milestones as we see them. I do have the benefit of having planners here from both agencies if there's questions on that. And then I just wanted to briefly, before we get into a discussion, just talk about some of the things that this plan will focus on. We do have public meetings. They're just part and parcel with what we do. They're required in pretty prescriptively in statute, and we will be continuing to do that. The statute also says we need to go out of our way to really tell the story with pictures. They're worth a thousand words, as they say. So we're more and more trying to use visuals, maps, interactive data online so that the public has tools that they can use. We use video, too, to try and explain some of the investment decisions that our policy board is asked to make. We do partner with community groups, particularly in low-income communities and communities of color. We have a competitive process where we contract with groups to help us engage residents in communities that might not otherwise participate. We have focus groups at times. We do some printed material. I think more and more we're putting information up online. We do have targeted mailings, more and more emails, really. I'm looking to build up our database, actually. So if you haven't already signed up to get updates on our plan, you can go to onebayarea.org and do so, or just sign in here and we can add you. We work with the news media. We have regular briefings, brown bag lunches, events, and so forth, so that they can report on the plan, key milestones. It's harder and harder with the traditional news media. It's a shrinking market and fewer reporters and so forth, but we still have a lot of interest. We have a dedicated website. We will, again, for the plan, so that the public has one place to go for information. We'll be doing statistically valid telephone surveys. We'll do intercept interviews with people on the street. We do tabling at community events. So with that, I had some questions in the memo, and I've got them up here. But I'm very curious and interested in your ideas, especially if you've participated in a good planning process and you have ideas on how we can do a better job. I'd love to hear them. Some of the challenges we face are how to present really complex technical investment and policy choices to the public. What ways do you like or do your organizations use to keep your constituents up to date? Do you have ideas for how to engage people beyond public meetings? More and more people just don't have, they're just not participating in public forums and so forth. So if there's ways to engage people that you've used or that you like, I'd love to hear them. We have started to use social media. So we have onebayarea.org is the website, and then we have a presence on Facebook and Twitter. And then the last process, many of you participated. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I think we learned a lot in that last process. So what went well, what didn't work so well, and what should we do different next time? Opportunities to partner with local planning efforts. Sometimes the best way to access a community is through a local group. So if you have ideas on that, we'd love to hear it, especially if you're with local government and you're about to do a major planning initiative. Are there ways we could partner with you? With that, I'd just like to open it up to questions, comments.
This is a comment from Paul Brooks. I was attended many of the meetings starting in 2011. A severe problem with those was that there was no ability on the part of MTC ABAG to discuss the cost-effectiveness of any of these strategies. For example, when I asked, well, great, we were told we need to know where the money is going to be spent for transport in the next 30 years. What are your ideas? I said, great, SB 375, cut CO2. What's the most cost-effective method of these options of cutting carbon dioxide per ton? No idea. Okay, well, what's the most effective way per passenger mile of transport? No idea, right? And continually, that, even though the staff, I think, was well-meaning, there was simply no data on that. And yet we were being asked to come up with an idea with where we wanted money. Do we want more bike lanes? Do we want more rail lines? Do we want more roads? Well, we said we don't have any data on that. And I think the fact that when the plan was ground through after 4 years, and it didn't save any carbon dioxide, was unfortunately showed that the plan was highly deficient in that. Plus, when we tried to ask those questions and delve further, we were cut off. The public was cut off initially. In those discussions, we were told, sorry, there's no more time for questions. And this, unfortunately, has the only time as a Berkeley researcher that I've finally lost my temper, which is still drifting around somewhere on the internet to my internal embarrassment. And there definitely needs to be more look at the cost-effectiveness. The buzzword we kept getting used was that we kept being told, this is smart growth. I said, what are you talking about? That doesn't mean anything. We need the data on how this will affect communities and so on. That was what was missing from these original meetings, and that's what got people angry, plus the lack of ability to comment and continually be cutting off. Plus, in these, the initial meetings were run by the firm, I can't forget, that you hired from Canada, from Vancouver, which stated in their prospectus, we will get support for your initiative. It was very clear that those meetings were organized and run so that it was not possible to answer the questions that they asked in any other way except to approve the plan. For instance, the questions did not have none of the above. I it was ridiculous. They didn't understand concepts. For example, they said, do you want cleaner air, yes or no? Well, I said, well, look, if you're going to put most of the new housing in the proposed housing on major traffic thoroughfares, which was the idea, that's where most of the air pollution is generated, and therefore the people next to those roads are going to be breathing most of it. So in actual fact, the plan has more people breathing worse quality air. So do you want cleaner air, yes or no? Well, it's a much more complicated question like that. And so technically, the public outreach was poor in the amount of data, and a continued attempt to cut off public comment was frankly a disgrace of the initial meetings. Now, it may have been the contractor. I don't know that this was MTC ABAC staff that were doing that, but the contractor you had hired was definitely trying to control those meetings. Those problems need to be addressed.
Thank you.
In the back? Ken?
Hi, I'm Ken Bukowski. I've been coming to these meetings for 20 years, and let me say that every time you do a regional transportation plan, you reinvent the public process. I would suggest you go back and take a look at all the studies you've done about the public process for every RTP, and I think you'd find very relevant information. I remember I did a transcript of one of those meetings in 1992, and I think you'd find the results very revealing as far as what you want to do. So I'd like to also suggest that you include video in all your meetings so people can actually follow them. You can read the stuff on paper, but what you see in video is a lot more meaningful. So if you let me know when you're having these meetings, I'll try to attend as many as possible, but I think you should include that as a mandatory element. Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Zelda Bronstein again. So I also participated both as a citizen commenter and as a reporter. The stated goal is meaningful participation. That's an admirable goal. But to achieve it, things are going to have to be done differently than they were last time, and I'd just like to second what Paul Brooks had to say. I'm looking at the specific tasks. This is Attachment A listed under public outreach. I wouldn't take too much time for me to go through all of them and tell you what I think, but I'm going to comment on a couple. Two rounds of telephone polls. Please don't do this. It's a total waste of time and money. It's basically bureaucratic window dressing. I wonder, by the way, if anybody looked. I mean, this stuff is really complicated. Most people don't know about Plan Bay Area, and those who do don't understand it, many of them, or would like to. Okay, I shouldn't say that, because actually those who do often do understand it. Did anybody look at the results of the poll? I actually looked at it this morning. In no case, in no county, and overall, did the people responding, I think about 2,500 people queried, think that regional planning was worthwhile. It came out overall 53% local cities and counties should plan. Regional planning, 44%. And in Napa, they felt that only 22% of the respondents felt that regional planning was worthwhile. Okay, so take a look at the queries. And does anybody pay any attention to those? I mean, I know they're posted online and elsewhere, but what significance do they have? Then there's something else here. CBO hosted focus groups, community-based organizations. Let me state what's obvious. This is a public process. CBOs are private entities. They are responsible or accountable only to their boards and their funders. They have no accountability to the public. And it's not a question whether they do good work or not. That's just what 501c3s are all about. Furthermore, in this context, many of them are interested parties. What do I mean? They've either gotten money from ABAG and MTC, or they want to get money or more money, or both. They have no business overseeing a public planning process. And, you know, this happened, you may remember, I certainly do, when a Greenbelt Alliance staff member was running a forum. There was an outrage. People said, I thought this was a public process. It was reported in the Contra Costa Times, and that was the end of it. And now, not only is it being revived, but it's being revived at a larger scale. No, public process. Have to have public officials, not people who are looking for money, or who are just private. This is part of the privatization of government, and it really needs to stop. Okay, the last point I'm going to make. I looked at the evaluation of the 2013 Plan Bay Area Public Outreach and Participation Program. Thank you for linking to it in the staff report. Page 20, under transparent process. Clarify which issues are truly open to debate and what is available for influence by the public at each phase of the planning process? Yes, which issues are available for debate? I found it interesting. I think I read this stuff, but I obviously didn't realize this is only going to be an update. Well, here's the way I think it should start. Not with just a single workshop or open house. It's not enough. We all know this was a really contentious process last time. What the regional agencies ought to do is hold a series of themed forums, each of which focuses on a different set of issues. For example, smart growth versus equity and displacement. 30,000 people, the plan said itself, the EIR said, are going to be displaced by the gentrification that's going to occur as a result of the smart growth policies. Smart growth versus industrial retention. I already said something about that, the commercial form of gentrification. Environmental carrying capacity, too much water, sea level rise versus too little, the drought. I read long public comments online from citizens alleging that the plan was not taking these issues into consideration. And then I wanted one of my favorites, and that's the population, the growth forecast. We're not allowed to say prediction. This was one of the most controversial parts of Plan Bay Area 2013. There was actually an emergency meeting called here. I don't know if it was noticed. There's a video of it online. That's because the ABAG demographer, Steve Levy, changed the method for calculating growth. It's supposed to be done under the aegis or according to the rules, the method followed by the California Department of Finance. He did it differently. So they hauled the DOF demographers here. It's great. You should watch the video, watching them sit there glumly saying, yeah, we're okay with this new method. And at one point, actually, Mr. Levy told a citizen who objected very politely that what he said was a crock. Okay, that's not acceptable language to be used by either a public official or a consultant. There are other instances, not just Mr. Levy, but of staff treating public disrespectfully. But this is more than disrespect. I'm talking about getting your hands around the basic issues that underlie this plan and this planning process and vetting them in a meaningful public way. That is going to take more than one workshop, and it's going to take a recognition of the staff of what public participation means. It's not just reacting to what you're putting out there. It's giving the public an opportunity to participate, not just lining up 100 people 3 minutes at a time, but hearing people who know something, and we all know who they are. In terms of the economic forecasting, there are professionals ranging from Greg Schmidt, who's a Palo Alto Council member, a former employee of the Federal Reserve in the Northeast, who is an economic forecaster by profession, wrote a long letter, which was then echoed by the Palo Alto City Council and others as well, who said these growth estimates are not being done the right way. Those issues, those disagreements need to be aired in a meaningful way. I hope you are listening, and not just listening, but that you take my comments into consideration and act on them. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Other comments? Yes.
Again, Bob McCauley with STA. I think we're looking at two different things here. One is the process and one is the contents. And while there's some overlap, I think it's especially appropriate right now to be talking about the process. Looking at where I saw the greatest frustration in members of the public and the advocacy groups last year, and especially the public that hadn't been involved in a process like this before Plan Bay Area, was really kind of the staff-level meetings that were taking testimony, and staff members were there, okay, tell me what you have to say, wrote it down, thank you, next person. I saw a lot of public frustration, that of, why aren't you talking to me and responding to what I'm saying? And so I think very early in the process, the greatest emphasis should be on the sorts of meetings that provide one-on-one, one-on-a-few input. Community open house meetings are a great way to do that, where you've got 10, 15, 20 different boards around. You've got staff, you've got some elected officials, but you get a chance to look somebody in the eye, talk to one person or a small group, explain whether they agree with the explanation or not, explain some of these things like, what are the decisions you can make? What are the decisions you can't make? What are the consequences of a community saying, we don't want to be a part of this? We don't want to take the state and federal money because we don't want the state and federal rules. So start off with that very one-on-one interactive process. We know that later on you have, as Ellen said, those prescriptive hearings where you have to have those meetings where you have 3 minutes, thank you for your comment, next person. We know those have to happen, but if people have had the chance early on to have a personal conversation, I think those more administrative, frankly boring meetings that you have to have anyway will be more accepted because people feel an interaction there. And when you're having those meetings where you're taking testimony, saying thank you, and next person, explain why you're doing it that way. I think people will be more understanding if they're told up front, this is not an interaction. This is simply we take the input. Now, that's a little bit harder for the public to take when they're talking to the elected officials than when they're talking to staff, because they do expect more for somebody who's about to take a vote to say, here's why I agree with that person, but not with that person in voting. But I think some of that explanation early on will be important. A little bit on content, and then I'll finish up, is, again, one of the reasons I think you saw a very in some areas, fairly divisive process last time, is there were some members of the public who simply said, this process cannot have a legitimate output. And that's the concern about the regional government. And since the decision makers weren't directly elected to MTC or ABAC, they're elected to a city council or county board of supervisors and then serve on regional boards, they felt there was a disconnect and that whatever input you got, whatever output you resulted with, it wouldn't have a legitimate process. It probably would be good early on to talk about kind of how the regional government exists and how the legitimacy does come down through the state. But understanding some people simply will not in the end accept that. But there's, I think, a much larger group that is persuadable, but they can be persuaded if they see a direct line between when comments were made, how those comments were considered, and the output that results from those. Why policy X is in the plan and policy Y is not. There's such a broad variety of input that everybody at some point is going to be disappointed that what they suggested wasn't done. But if they can see how there's a direct line between input, analysis, output, you're more likely to get that vast middle say, I don't like that, but I think the process was legitimate to get to that output. And I think taking that into consideration when you're developing the public input or the public participation plan is going to be something that will get a more broadly accepted process in the end. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Amber Crabb with the San Francisco TA. I just wanted to, you're asking for kind of best practices and lessons we've learned. We recently completed our San Francisco transportation plan, and one tool that we found to be really effective was, we called it a budget czar tool, where it was an online system where we asked the public, each individual could go and work on developing their own investment scenarios. So it started with general questions like what, do you want 50% of transit state of good repair? Do you want 75%? Do you want 100% for transit, local streets and roads? And then once those parameters were filled out, it talked about, do you want to expand transit? Do you want to increase bus service? And so another set of questions that would allow them, within the financial constraint that we had, to kind of make their own decisions and trade-offs about what you could fund and what you couldn't, and how it's iterative and works together. And we thought it wasn't just an effective tool in providing input to us, but it also, I think, helped to raise awareness of the challenges that we faced with a very small amount of resources to try to distribute it across many resources. So that was, we'd be happy to, if you haven't seen it already, share something like that with you, but something interactive, not just a public comment, but something that's more interactive we found to be really successful.
Other questions? Right here.
So I just want to appreciate the earlier comments in terms of having, I think, particularly early on, some more focused meetings, some smaller meetings possibly, where that are held not necessarily here, but in the communities that you're trying to reach. I think that can be a really effective way. Also, to echo one of the comments someone made during the introductions, someone said they're retired now, so they can come to these. And I think it would be really helpful to consider having meetings at alternative hours, so in the evenings, on the weekends, in order to reach people who aren't able to come to a meeting in the middle of the day. My guess is most of us that are here in this room are paid to be here as part of our work, as opposed to the majority of us being from the general public. And so, and I think in terms of some of those meetings, I think there is definitely a role for partnership with community groups. Just to ensure that the outreach is appropriate, that you're reaching the groups that you want to meet. Certainly, I think a lot of the community-based groups, they do have the connections to the community that MTC doesn't have, and so finding a way to partner effectively, I think, is important. Along those lines, I was curious to hear whether or not you, to the degree to which you're looking at alternative languages other than English, both in the presentation of materials as well then in the meetings that you're doing. I think a lot of groups have gotten creative with things like simultaneous translation just as a means of pulling in
voices that otherwise would not or could not participate in the process.
Yeah, I didn't mention it, but we do have one of our, under our limited English proficiency plan, we do translate vital documents and all the like the all the key stuff related to Plan Bay Area is for that's meant for the public is translated automatically into Spanish and Chinese, and it's up on the website. In addition, we partner with community-based organizations, and many of those meetings are done in language. A lot of the groups don't like simultaneous translation, so we've kind of stopped doing that. They find it disruptive and distracting. So we tend to, we've of late been just having a meeting in one language tailored to the people who are in attendance.
Thanks.
Yes.
Yes, Raj Chittenden with the Contra Costa Transportation Authority. We're in the, also in the midst of updating our countywide transportation plan and really gearing up a public participation, public output, or public outreach process. And it's really going to continue for probably another year and a half, and it might have some lessons learned for you. So it'd be adopting our CTP, which we expect to do in about February, and then continue with that towards some possible investment decisions. We are fortunate enough to learn a little bit from SFCTA. We have some of the same consultants on board, and echo a little bit with what Amber said. Some of the things that we're doing that I think could help here really to penetrate into the local communities is we're holding some workshops, and we are asking the elected officials to host those, and we're fortunate enough that they've agreed to do that. We are involving the CBOs, but I think a comment earlier is appropriate. Having the local or having elected officials host gives it additional credibility. There's a lot of, in addition to social media, there's other non-traditional media, a lot of community newsletters and things like that that can really get into the local area. We're building on an online engagement tool that right now is really input. So we're asking folks, you know, by going through a decision matrix to talk about what they like, and we haven't got to the dislike yet. We might get to that point. Right now it's an input, but what we're working on and how do we feedback that information to say that they're listening. Some of the other things, probably not real innovative, but they're innovative for us. Tonight we're doing a telephone town hall. We expect to have 500 people call in, and we're going to host it kind of like a radio talk show. So anyway, those are some of the things that we're doing, and be happy to share with you guys as you go through it and see what we learned. Some, I'm sure, work well, and some we're going to wonder why we did it. But.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? Just raise your hand. Yes.
Hello, Adam Garcia with Greenbelt Alliance. Just three quick suggestions to help improve, enhance the process for Plan Bay Area 2017. For one, most I think you've kind of mentioned, but just to emphasize, for one is the targeted stakeholder community meetings. I think reaching out to business community, housing, open space, elderly, youth groups, and having kind of listening and response sessions, I think has been discussed, where there's more interaction and dialogue with those specific interest groups. Secondly is an ambassador approach. There's a great example through San Jose's general plan update. What they had was a general plan task force which helped ask people representing the community to reach out to their constituents, empowered with maps, with facts, fact sheets, how-tos, to really help bridge that gap between what the city is doing and what the local community interests are that they represent. For ABAG MTC, one body that might be appropriate for this is the Regional Planning Committee that represents a lot of different groups. Thirdly, I think is just to be aspirational in the framing and vision of the Plan Bay Area. I think spending, you know, a little more money on in understanding public opinions, research in local communities about the needs and aspirations of those communities, I think, can be greatly helpful in advancing those local policy suggestions and recommendations for Plan Bay Area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Others, other comments?
Thank you again for the opportunity to speak. I tend to go off in 29 different directions, but I think the architects of regional planning purposely have 29 different streams of attack to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. But I'm wondering sometimes if the staff of MTC and the California Air Resources Board actually live in a county, live in a city where they have to walk out their front door and they see something built and they realize they need to go to their planning commission and find out what goes on in the planning commission, who are the planning commission members that they're appointed by the city council, then have to go to their city council and find out something about a general plan, and then you're sitting in front of consultants that are telling you that it's state law, and then you wonder what state law is, and you ask them, they won't tell you. Then you realize we're layered upon layered of state laws that amend other state laws, that we now are required to have a general plan. It's very thick, it's very heavy, and it's very expensive. Mill Valley probably spent $500,000, $400,000. Every city is doing it. I'm just in Pleasanton. It's like members of city councils are almost crying now because they have to raise their hand because they're being told by high-priced consultants that it's state laws. And one brave council member said no in Pleasanton, but the rest are voting for it, and this is true in every city. Fairfax, 1,000 people got signatures, and they actually forced the city council to amend their zoning. I don't know if you watched, in Larkspur, 700 people showed up with red shirts, and they went thumbs down on the money for Larkspur Landing. People are fighting this thing the best, they're fighting this thing all over the Bay Area, and I don't expect the staff to know what's going on or to represent them, because this plan is really about funding wonderful people that work for bureaucracies that do that are putting together very expensive plans that are fleecing the public. So local control is where I live, in Mill Valley, and we're being told that this is not about Plan Bay Area. This is not about SB 375. Wade Holland opened the Planning Commission last summer. This is not about Plan Bay Area. This is not about 375. Judy Arnold opened the Board of Supervisors when they were doing their housing element. She said this is not about Plan Bay Area. Bay Area, not about 375. They're trying to hide this thing from the public. If you want public participation, tell them the truth. There is no such thing as a zero-emission truck. It's called the truth. And it'll help this whole organization if you just tell the truth. I didn't do a very good job on that, but thanks for the opportunity.
Go ahead. You're next.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. Peter Singleton. I'm sorry I came in late, and so this may have been covered, but I wanted to share a couple of thoughts and concerns. When Mr. Paul, when you, and I don't mean any disrespect to you whatsoever, or to any of the staff here, when you presented to the executive board on this plan for public participation in Plan Bay Area 2 or Plan Bay Area 2017, I spoke there as well, and the fundamental concern I have the fundamental concerns are twofold. The first is your presentation here and Ms. Brown's presentation here is basically the problem with the public participation process was in Plan Bay Area 1 was that we didn't do a good enough job of selling to the public this great and wonderful plan, and they just didn't understand it. And as I told you in May, we understand the plan, we just don't like the plan. And there was no consideration, there is no consideration now, there will be no consideration of the substance of the public's concerns about this plan. And so the public process is a sham. It's a sham. It's a kabuki theater process towards your predetermined conclusion. And so it's not, you can talk about public participation all you want, but you don't want our input because you won't change the plan. You won't change the premises. You won't remove any of the fraud in the assumptions in the models. I'll give you one example of dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens. Okay? And Ms. Clevenger is aware of this. You're all aware of this. In the draft EIR and in the final EIR, you said specifically, this is a statement of fact, that the Bay Area or the California needs to reduce greenhouse gases by 25% to 35% to reach 1990 levels. And that is used as a pretext for this draconian and coercive plan. But you know to an absolute fact that the more current models, the more accurate models show that California is at 1990 greenhouse gas emission levels. If I did that in any of my personal dealings, I would be faced with 20 years in a state-provided housing facility like San Quentin. You guys get away with it with impunity, this kind of fraud in your models, your assumptions, and in your arguments. The other thing is I want to address this to the Regional Advisory Working Group. I have a fundamental concern as a citizen and as your fellow resident, for policy to be made up by the people who are getting funded by these policies, who are basically feeding off of the public trough. There's nothing wrong with you guys, working and getting paid to advocate for these policies, but I think there's something fundamentally wrong with you guys making up the policies that you're getting funded by. We don't have a seat at the table. So this whole process is illegitimate and a sham. And I'm saying that in respect to you guys as my neighbors. And you should be ashamed. The public, when they fully find out what you're doing to them, the severe limitations on how and where we can travel, how and where we can live, when they find out what you're doing to us, they are going to hold all of you accountable. You're on notice. You will be held accountable.
Other comments or questions? Last chance. Anyone else? What? I'm talking about people that haven't had a chance to speak. You've had a chance to speak twice. And I'd be happy to
talk to you. No, I spoke to another agenda item, and I drove all the way from Marin County. And there's a group called Marin Grassroots. They got $57,000 from ABAG. They're looking for money from MTC. Erica Erickson, the assistant director of this nonprofit, they're a nice group. She's on the Marin County Planning Commission. That is how bad it's gotten. She's mentioning groups like Greenbelt Alliance, Urban Habitat. Oh, Urban Habitat. They sued the poor people in Pleasanton. They sued the poor people in Pleasanton. They're lobbying for the same legislation that allowed that language to get put in their general plan so that they could come along and sue. That's what this plan's about. Write the legislation, go to the city, sell your services so that you can deal with the plan. It's really neat.
Last chance. Anyone else that hasn't spoken? Okay, thank you.
Just not a response, but just to kind of recognize some of the input that we have received. It seems that there is a concern about how to have a meaningful engagement, and that getting some of the tools or refining some of the process so there is some interaction between the input that we received and the output seems to be an important concern that has been expressed in different ways. And I think we're taking that seriously. There are, in addition to what Ellen has presented, there are a number of other meetings and venues and sessions that we'll be explaining as we move further into the plan. I think some of the tools and some of the processes that our local partners are implementing on the ground will be quite helpful in getting a more rounded conversation around Plan Bay Area 2017. And we really appreciate your effort and time to come here and share with us your thoughts and criticism.
So that concludes that item, the public participation plan. And the next item on the agenda was just whether there were any other public comments. And if not, then we are adjourned. Thank you.